So, Mark, you're advocating something that isn't strictly within the bounds of the regulations. In fact, could be read as a violation. And it helps you, certainly, for a dissent. But you're also helping out the flow for the controllers, the Southwest jet. We've got heavy military traffic in the pattern. You're advocating putting your certificate on the line for somebody else's convenience. How can you justify that?
Well, I don't think I'm putting my certificate on the line. I'm not putting it on the line any more than I when I drive 7 miles an hour over the speed limit. This is a situation in which it's very, very clear, and I don't like implied clearances very much, but it's very, very clear that there's nothing other than a visual approach involved here. I think the risk is literally so low as to be completely inconsequential, and I'm more interested in not having to go around and not having to be resequenced and all of that stuff and finally getting to lunch.
I'm with Mark on this. I think sometimes you need to do what makes sense within the context of the situation. It's pretty clear that the approach controller intended you to contact the tower for the purpose of landing. He thinks he cleared you for the visual.
I remember we had another scenario, a lost comm scenario, where the pilot arrived at a fix like 45 minutes before he was supposed to do, and we had the discussion, and our controller at the table agreed, land the damn thing. Do I really think in this situation that a controller is going to violate me? They're going to thank me.
In the real world, is they're not even going to notice because the approach controller is not talking to the tower controller. The approach controller sets up the sequence, and in more than likely in this case, there's a silent data transfer. So your data block shows up on the tower controller's display with like a V36 in the data block, which means you're on a visual 36. The tower controller is going to assume that you've been cleared for the visual. It's just going to clear to land. If there was some reason for the approach controller to withhold the visual clearance because of conflicting traffic or something, they would tell you, they would tell the tower, somebody would get it. So, you know, even though I voted for clarify, the real world is nobody would ever notice.
So building on that, you actually, though, said you would have checked in, remained at 3,000, and said you weren't cleared.
I probably would.
Despite what you just said. Now,
right.
Why is that?
Because we're almost splitting hairs here, but if I was still, I mean, we're like 6-7 miles out at 3,000 feet, it's not like I'm over the threshold at 3,000 feet. I still got a little bit of time. And I would probably say something like, 8 Mike Quebec, you know, checking in and we're not cleared yet, or just some words to that effect in the initial transmission. But more than likely, I wouldn't have left the other guy's frequency without double checking. But it does happen. And, you know, I've been in situations, I'm sure we all have too, where maybe you've been cleared for an approach way out, you know, like you're cleared for an ILS 10-mile final, and they never switch over to the tower. And then you get inside the final approach fix and you say, hey, approach, you want me to talk into the tower? And, you know, oh, yeah, contact the tower now, you know. So I think we're talking more about the regulatory aspect of this than the real-world aspect. And also, and I'll just expand a little more then shut up. In the real world, again, more than likely what would happen is if you came over and said, number three, I haven't been cleared, tower controller is going to hit the landline to the approach controller. Hey, Mike Quebec said he's not cleared. Approach controller is going to go, clear him. Get out of my ear. You know, go away. I don't have time for this. So it's going to be pretty well taken care of. But suppose this was, another more, a situation that had more consequences where there was a possible loss of separation in this. So now, you know, how do we move from this innocuous situation to something that requires a little bit more regulatory piece?
Yeah, I kind of went back and forth on this one, and I don't generally like the sort of category of answer that says that we can just assume what ATC wanted and do that, because I'm not a controller. I don't have the big picture in this scenario, and it's just not something that scales very well if you have pilots deciding what they think ATC wanted. That said, I think I would do exactly what Mark did here, because I can't see anything that could have been intended other than to clear for the visual. So, I mean, what could change my mind would be is there anything they could have possibly intended? I mean, can they defer that clearance to the tower?
They could, but somehow in that process, somebody would have had to coordinate and let you know, you know, proceed straight in, but maintain 3,000. Tarrell will tell you when you can descend, or, you know, there would have to be a further instruction.
Sure. And there was none.
And there was none.
So what makes sense here?
When I first came across the scenario, my initial impression was exactly what I ended up saying. And then I spent the next 3 days arguing myself out of it. And I just couldn't, and most anything anybody can come up with as a reason is something that I went through myself. And what I realized that was once Approach said, contact tower, they were done with me. If they needed me to go around, if they needed me to be resequenced, it would have happened already. And as I said, I'm not really big on implied clearances. I really don't like them. I'm one of those that no matter how clear VFR, a Class Bravo clearance is implicit, I will ask for it. We actually had a situation once where we had to fly into Charlotte. And we have like a dozen VFR airplanes coming in. And I'm given the final vector for the downwind bringing me into the Bravo. And I hadn't heard the magic words. And I said before changing frequencies, confirmed I'm clear into the Class Bravo. The controller's response was priceless. Everyone within the sound of my voice is cleared into the Class Bravo. So I'm not one to lightly reject this, but this was just so clear to me, it didn't make any sense to have any other answer. Yeah.
Well, it's important. You mentioned the AIM guidance relative to not all situations can be categorized, and there has to be some discretion and good judgment on the part of the pilot involved as to what the intentions are and how you should proceed. And I think you did that in this case. I think it does apply to this type of situation.
That's why we have guys like Mark. You know, if I
I
would do exactly what his choice was, to be very honest. And I'm saying this publicly, you know, I'm probably the poster child for anti-authority. I'll admit that. But this is a situation. Now, when you talk about going into Class Bravo, that's an entirely different situation. We're talking about a huge piece of airspace and airplanes flying all over the place. But here, where the controller has been very specific in sequencing people for the approach, and to be very honest, if we kind of bugger things up, it's going to throw such a monkey wrench into all this work the controller has done to sequence these things.
Not to mention, you're going to wind up at the end of the line.
Exactly. I mean, I fly into Kennedy. I have to fly into Kennedy very frequently in a 182, okay? And if I don't do what they're expecting me to do, I'm really going to bugger the works up, and it might be I'm fuel critical before they sequence me back in line. I really think that this is the most appropriate choice.
Well, but one of those things is, again, going back to that first comment or first question, you're doing something for the smoothness of the system and assuming that that's going to work out for you. For, you know, if you were one of the folks who's like, okay, I'm going to stay at 3,000 feet and as John was saying, I've got some distance, right? Well, then if there is a back and forth and all that, now you still might get your clearance, but now you're even closer and you're bringing it on yourself. Now you're going to have to make the rapid descent and you've almost asked for it. Put yourself in that position, right?
You know, when we talk about risk management, we're talking about risk reward, okay? What's the risk of getting a violation equal the reward of making it good for everybody? I like to lead my life that way.
But I'm just still not comfortable with the idea of assuming that that's what they wanted me to do. I get all the discussion we've had previously. It all makes sense. But I'd still like to get onto the tower frequency and say, hey, look, here I am, 3,000, not cleared for the visual. It's basic VFR, so I'm not worried really about not being able to avoid traffic. Maybe it's going to delay my arrival a few minutes, but I'd much rather be in contact with ATC and work it out that way than say, well, I think he cleared me. I'm going to start down now.
If you were in a situation where it was definitely going to delay your arrival, would that change it at all? Like if we definitely were too close and would have to get sequenced back around?
No. I'm not going to do something. If in fact the exchange between tower and control approach on the landline now means that I'm that much closer too high, I'm not now going to destabilize my airplane and my plan just so I can get down on the runway. I mean, these sorts of conflicts pop up all the time, especially at busy airports. Controllers are good at working them out. I'm in visual conditions. I know my airplane. I can adjust as necessary. Yeah, it's a little inconvenient, but stuff happens.
You're maintaining 3,000.
I'm maintaining 3,000 until I get approval from tower, or you know, they send me back, or whatever it is they do before I descend.
There's a very easy solution to this, too. You just go over to tower and say, canceling IFR.
Well, now that's an interesting question. I wondered about that in this scenario. Can tower accept that?
Sure.
Can all towers accept that? Or are they going to have to send you back are they going to relay it through to approach?
They would have – depends upon a tower more than likely. If it was a combined facility and they're rated up and down, it would say, yeah, and maybe just change the data block to put a V on it for VFR. If it was a Class D tower, like a satellite tower or something, they would probably have to go back to the approach controller and say, Mike Quebec just canceled, staying with me, or something to that effect. But I'm going to turn the tables on you, Mark. I'm going to come to you as a client. I just got a letter from the FAA because I got violated for an altitude bust. I left 3,000 without clearance on final to Charleston, and you're my lawyer. How are we going to defend this?
Well, thank goodness for the compliance program, because I actually thought of that. I mean, what happens, you know, if the
– You got your lawyer hat on now.
If the surprising comes to play, you know, confess and comply. I really thought I was cleared. I really thought it was the right thing to do. Let's talk about it. And what my advice is always when they get that first phone call is that before you even respond to it, contact your CFI. And I've given this advice as an attorney. Contact your CFI, get some ground, get some talking to, log it. So when you really talk to them, it's going to be in the context of, I've already addressed this situation.
And that's why you said that you were cleared for the visual. You know, I'm on the visual. You got that on the tape.
Exactly.
You know, just to make sure that I really did believe it. See, there it is right there. And your NASA form, of course, that you
NASA form, definitely.
Makes sense. You know, another thing just sort of in this scenario that you did bring up, which is kind of interesting, is about the restrictiveness or not of IFR. There's this kind of, you know, plastic border between what is IFR and VFR when you're IFR in visual conditions. And this pilot started by, like, you know, being able to follow the coastline and things like that. I'm just wondering if that's part of what happens. It's sort of a problem here. We fall into a in-between world where we're not thinking IFR anymore because we're flying at visual conditions, even though we advocate to people, you know, fly IFR. I don't know if anyone wanted to speak to that or times that that's really come to kind of bite them in the past.
Well, it hasn't come to bite me, but it's one that we actually did into Charleston from the opposite direction. We were coming from my base at Sanford, North Carolina, which is north, and a friend of mine and I decided to take his SR-22 and fly to lunch in Charleston. And our IFR flight plan was to Myrtle Beach and then whatever the routing was that he had selected, he was pilot in command. And as we were talking to Fayetteville on the way down, we said, we'd like to get to Myrtle Beach and simply follow the coast. And the response was, okay, you know, so long as it's not IMC and it's not busy and separation is an issue, there really isn't a problem of it. And I've known people, friends, who have done the same thing in Florida of trying to follow the coastline while still taking the benefits of IFR, mostly of which is dealing with more complex airspace.
And what about, you know, almost the converse of that, like going into the busy airspace, you know, you talked about going into Kennedy a bunch, trying to go in VFR instead of IFR just for the flexibility of it. You're shaking your head, Doug. I know, like, going into Boston, there have been plenty of times where it's like, it's so much easier to get in there VFR if I can for an Angel flight or something than IFR.
There are a lot of times going into Kennedy, they will just unable to help you.
Yeah.
Unable to help you. And the same thing, actually, leaving Kennedy VFR is virtually impossible because you'll call clearance delivery and say VFR to 1 Bravo 1, and they'll say, stand by. And now you know they're going to someone else. How do we deal with this person? What do we tell them?
Right.
And so I guess it depends, you know, where you are. In Boston, you can get away with it. Kennedy, forget about it.
So the other corollary to this situation, if it was, you know, we talked about the lull of being in VMC, even though we're on an IFR flight plan, would it have been any different if you were IFR in IMC and the controller had said flighting 360, join the localizer, and then 2 minutes later said contact tower, and the glide slope's coming down and you haven't been cleared, would you go over to the tower and say, you know, same situation, we're IFR without a clearance, but we're in IMC?
I'm going to punt on that one, and I'll tell you exactly how I'm going to punt. If I am under IFR in IMC and my expectation was an instrument approach, I am really, really key to listening for the words of clearance for the instrument approach, because I've actually known people who thought they were cleared for the approach, joined the localizer, which is not an approach clearance, and started down and got violated for it. So I think in that case, I think a lot of pilots are going to be more hardwired to really listen for that approach clearance.
In many ways, but I will say, if I were IMC, very definitely, if I haven't heard, because it has happened on times, and it might be fly heading so-and-so to join, but not cleared the approach, and especially with clients who are nervous and don't know quite what's going on, and are we clear for the approach? Well, ask them, but don't start down until you're sure. And so it's just pros clarify, are we cleared for the approach? Negative. Okay, thanks.
Or yeah, you're cleared. Go away.
Yeah. Well, definitely comes down to the idea of clarifying. But, you know, again, if you have a certain expectation for things to happen, it's easy to step ahead in the system. You know, whether you thought you could join the localizer, you thought you were cleared for the approach, I agree, in those situations, you're probably you're keyed, you're waiting for those magic words. But in these in-between things, which happen more often in the real world than anything else, right? The most common IFR approach has got to be the visual approach. It happens more than anything else. You are in this weird sort of netherworld where you're operating under one set of instructions and another kind of conditions. And the real key takeaway, I guess, is that to think about, you've got to clarify what you believe you were told to do, and to take any clearance that you get from ATC, any instruction, and just process it for a moment before parroting it back on the mic and then saying, now, what did he just clear me to do? Oh, wait. I can't do that. And that's a situation that you just don't want to find yourself in.